Yeah, it goes like this right here. It's like, niggas always be hollering peace, you know what I'm saying? Peace, my brother, peace this, peace that, you know what I'm saying? But every time I try to get a peace of mind, niggas try to get a peace of mind. So I gotta grab my peace. It's the return of the gangster, gangster. Them niggas that's on that blow that run up in your crib, which contains your lady and an 8-month-old child to raise. Plus you true blue about this music, but they do not want to hear, because they'd rather be bouncing and shooting and killing and bouncing and shit. Get down. Return of the gangster, gangster. Them niggas that think y'all soft and say y'all be gospel rapping, but they be steady clapping when you talk about bitches and switches and hoes and clothes and weed. Let's talk about time traveling, rhyme javelin, something mind unraveling. Get down. Return of the gangster, gangster. Them niggas that got them kids, they got enough to buy ounce, but not enough to bounce them kids to the jewel, to the park, so they grow up in the dark, never seeing light, so they end up being like your star ass, robbing niggas and broad ass. They like, get down. Return of the gangster, gangster. Them niggas who get the wrong impression of expression, then the question is big, but what's up with Andre? Is he in the coke? Is he on drugs? Is he gay? When y'all gonna break up? When y'all gonna wake up? Nigga, I'm feeling better than ever. What's wrong with you? You get down. Gangster.
Nigga don't want no trouble. A player just wanna kick back with my gators off and watch my little girl blow bubbles. But still ready to rhyme, standing my grind, never back down, willing to rob, steal, and kill anything that threatens mine. But good luck couldn't be bought, see, many of fights had to be fought, G. For a nigga to ride these bowls, oh so close to the sidewalk, to be gawked at. Watch your side, my nigga, cause we got gas. The first nigga to bump is gonna be the first nigga we attack. Don't want that, but it comes though, most of the time when you don't know. Sticking together like flour and water to make that slow dough. Work for everything we have and gon' stick up for each other like we brothers from another mother. Kinda like Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. Strictly for the caddy lovers and never the nut hugging punk motherfuckers. Yeah. So quit spreading them rumors. We in Club Nouveau. Know that. Yeah. Yeah.
It is the return. The return of the Entitled Movie Podcast on MoreLikeRadio.com. My name is Mark Nixon, and it's the return of the gangsta, thanks to Chris Wetton. Chris Wetton, you're finally back. You are finally back.
Thank you, gangsta. Great show.
Yes, thank
you. Laughing my ass off
while I'm trying to understand. It is July 17th, 2016. It's been several days since we've been on the air last, and it's been significantly more since Chris has been able to be on the show. And so, yes, thank you, Damon, but as always, we are joined by Chris Wetton. He is the yin to my yang on the Untitled Movie Podcast. And well, don't get into it too much, but so let's get into it. First of all, I would like to talk the week that you were not here, which would have been the week of July 10th. Your box office numbers would have included that Secret Life of Pets had a $103 million box office debut. Albert Brooks is now the king of box office supreme 2016 because he's in this and he's in Finding Dory, correct?
It's going to look weird when we look back at the books and we're like looking through the years of the top grossing star of the 2000s. And it's like, Albert Brooks. What?
Albert Brooks!
2016 Albert Brooks?
Holy shit, he's multi-talented. Yeah, Secret Life of Pets, you saw that, correct?
Yeah. Went and took the kids to it. Yeah.
Excellent. So that was number one last week.
Funny movie. I mean, funny kids movie. Not Zootopia. I feel like Zootopia now is the new The Incredibles or whatever. You know what I mean?
Oh, really?
Did you see Zootopia?
I didn't see Zootopia, no.
Zootopia, for me, is the new sort of metric to measure other kids' movies against. For a long time, it was, you know, Toy Story, or it's generally a Pixar movie.
Okay.
But Pixar, although Inside Out is fantastic, Finding Dory was funny.
Okay.
Zootopia is really clever and has, you know, it goes through beats and it's surprising, and it is the new metric to measure kids' movies against, in my opinion. I'm talking to people who are our buddies. Our buddy Jason went up to visit our buddy Brandon in Gainesville.
Yes.
The two of them sat and watched Zootopia together. That's how funny this movie is.
Like, really?
Yeah, it's two, like, you know, men in their late 30s, like, hanging out after a day of canoeing watching Zootopia. So tells you how funny that movie is. And they both liked it.
Well, nice. All right. Well, I didn't realize that it was as snappy as it was going to be when it came to, you know, the content and everything else. But let me back up. Secret Life of Pets.
Secret Life of Pets.
Okay. So it made bank last week. It is the number one movie this weekend.
Yep. 2 weeks in a row.
Because it made $50 million, $50.6 million. Cumulative toll now is 203. Your second place movie is the Ghostbusters movie, the reboot with Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones, Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, directed by Paul Feig, who did the Bridesmaids movies. It had a budget of $144 million, and it made $46 million. Would you... I want to get into Zootopia for a second, but before we get into...
Ghostbusters. We talk Zootopia afterwards. That's fine, yeah.
Well... Is $46 million good?
I think they were expecting more. I was expecting more. I haven't read any of these sort of box office reports from today. But if the budget's $140,
okay,
you make, you know, $40 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, you have not made back one-third of your budget on opening weekend. That spells trouble in this day and age for a reboot like this. Because these kind of reboots and remakes... This movie doesn't have great reviews, like, they're all pretty lukewarm. If you look at Rotten Tomatoes, the aggregator sites,
right,
it generally gets positive reviews. I think it's at like 76 or something like that on Rotten Tomato, but that don't confuse that and make it think that the movie is 76% good. That means 76% of the reviewers said, yeah, it's okay, it's not bad, you know, and that's
right,
kind of how I felt about it. It's okay, it's not bad.
Okay.
But 44 or whatever, like, making one-third of your budget on opening weekend this day and age, that can be problematic, I think. I don't know. I don't know what the worldwide box office is going to be like for this, but I don't think they're happy with 44 or whatever that is.
But it's going to make its money back. It has to make...
How do you figure?
Overseas. The overseas market.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know. It's weird. We talked about this the last time I was here. It's weird which movies are successful and which movies are not successful overseas. And I don't know if Ghostbusters with this cast, you know, nothing against anyone that's in it, I just don't know what kind of foreign draw they have or the Ghostbusters brand has. We haven't had a Ghostbusters movie since 1988 or whatever it was, you know what I mean? So it's not like we have much of a metric to measure this against.
Okay.
But I don't know. I feel like we talked about Ghostbusters several months ago when we were looking ahead at the summer schedule. I felt like it was going to make money. You felt like... probably not going to make money, or you didn't feel like it was going to make the kind of money I thought it was going to make. Like, I thought it was going to be bigger than $44 million.
I mean,
certainly thought it would be number one in its weekend.
It just didn't seem... It didn't seem like it got a fair shot, because there was so much... Even before... Okay, look. Let's just get into it. This is our review.
Yeah.
So
we're talking about the review. We're also talking about everything that this movie.
The logistics bringing up to the.
There's a lot of logistics with this.
Yeah. So, but for starters, number one, if you don't watch the movie first, because there's going to be spoilers.
See it before you make an opinion.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So when you see the trailer, and the trailer is not that good.
It's not good. It's not funny.
And I was pleasantly surprised by the fact that the movie was not like the trailer, because the trailer is just devoid of any and all humor for me. But it was the most disliked video on YouTube by a country mile. No one had anything good to say, and if you did say anything good about it, well, then you're obviously pegged as this, and if you're saying bad stuff about it, you're ought to be pegged as that, blah blah blah. So you saw it today,
yes,
with your daughter.
Yes.
Who was the also aforementioned daughter that said, I'd rather see the boys' version of Ghostbusters.
Famously Among Us.
Yes.
She watched the preview for this 2016 Ghostbusters and said, I want to watch the one with the boys.
Okay. So you tell me what you think.
I think it's a good movie for, I think it is a good movie for kids, probably from that age, 5 years old to maybe teens. Like, and I said, when I sort of, you know, did like a mini review of it online, I said that, like, it's not terrible.
Okay.
I think a lot of people out there, as you said, a lot of bros were like, gonna hate this movie no matter what.
When you walked into this movie, did you have expectations? No. They were just low.
No expectations, other than what I saw in the trailer, which I would disagree with you a little bit. Like, I think the movie gives you pretty much what you get from the trailer, and I just didn't hate the trailer as much as everyone else did. I just thought it was sort of like, this movie is about as funny as in the Ghostbusters world as the Back to the Future ride was in the Back to the Future world. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, yes, this is that world. Mm-hmm. But these jokes, they're just not that funny. And the movie's not terribly scary. Now, this is supposed to be a scary, funny movie, and it doesn't accomplish either one of those two things. So I think technically that makes it a failure.
Okay.
But that's not to say it's terrible. I can't say it's terrible. I wasn't sitting there just remarking about how terrible it was.
Right.
There are likable people on screen. The movie is, you know, got, you know, good special effects, as good as you would see in anything, you know, in the newest Men in Black movie, or, you know, any type of family sci-fi horror type movie.
Okay.
Goosebumps, you know, those kind of things. Like, that's where this belongs, in that same category.
Okay.
Not a great movie, not clever, not scary, also not terrible. You can sit through it. I smiled a couple times. I can't say I ever laughed out loud even once. I can't say the theater I was in had a lot of people laughing out loud. I've heard otherwise from some people online. But my theater didn't. There was not a lot of laughter.
Okay.
So, you know, make of that what you will.
Okay.
My theater was also not full. It was a 12 o'clock noon show on Sunday. So make of that what you will.
It
was half full. Half full theater, I would say. Like, probably exactly half full.
Okay.
You know, not a lot of laughs, not a lot of scares. My five-year-old loved it. That's not a dig. That's not me saying, like, oh, it's only for, you know, children.
Yeah.
It's not only for children. As a parent, you look for movies that you can sort of take your kids to that aren't going to make you want to, you know, like, shove a pencil in your eye.
Because you are going to watch it 10 more times.
You're
going to
watch it, well, even the one time, but yes, many times you will be watching it 10 more times.
Yeah.
And even one time, you don't want to always sit through an animated movie. So it's nice to be able to take my daughter to a movie like this.
Okay.
Not terrible. I enjoyed sitting through it once. I have no desire to ever see it again. I doubt I will. Unless, well, I got to take that back. Because my daughter already said she wanted to see it. on the way out, she was like, I really liked it. I think, you know, I've talked to several guys, I've talked to several girls. All the girls I've talked to liked it. All the guys I've talked to were somewhere between hated it and lukewarm. And
why did the guys hate it? Hate it, not disliked it, hated it.
When I say talk to, I'm talking about reviews I have watched online, you know, sort of, and fanboy type guys.
Oh, okay.
These are the exact bros that I think
prejudged
the movie before they ever saw it.
Right.
But I gotta say, like, it's not that clever. It just isn't. You know, most of the humor comes from, probably my biggest complaint is the script. The script is not that clever.
Okay.
The characters are not that clever.
Okay.
The first Ghostbusters movie basically contains four guys that are sort of vaguely goofy, but not overtly goofy, mostly saying really sarcastic stuff about ghosts.
Like, okay.
Mostly the first one, when I say first one, I'm talking about Ghostbusters, the original.
From 1984, okay.
Mostly just, you know, a bunch of guys being sarcastic and, you know, sort of vaguely goofy, but not overtly goofy.
Right.
These four characters are overtly goofy, all of them. Like, they are all, to a lesser degree,
Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy, of all of them, strangely enough, is the one who sort of mugs it up and hams it up on screen the least.
She's the straight person.
She is the straight person of the movie, no doubt. Even Kristen Wiig gets quite a bit of physical humor in there, quite a lot of mugging and a lot of, like, grimacing and goofy faces and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The other two, who I've openly said I'm not a fan of, Leslie Jones and
Kate McKinnon. Cameron. Yeah.
Leslie Jones, not as bad. She actually did fine with her part, I thought. Like, just not given very much, but did fine with what she was given.
Right.
Kate McKinnon, I'm sorry. Everyone, I hate to be, like, you know, I don't like her, so I'm not going to like her in this movie.
No, this is fine. Own what you say, and don't be apologetic because you're not trying to be misogynistic when you're talking about this.
That has nothing to do with misogyny. I don't find her funny, and in this movie, I will say, we've always heard for years, like, one of the toughest things to do as an actor is nothing on screen sometimes, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Occasionally, you'll see a movie where it's, you know, Pacino and De Niro, and they're not both being Pacino and De Niro simultaneously when they're sitting across from each other in that table in Heat. What makes that scene so great is the two of them know when to do nothing. Now, this is not Heat, and these people are not De Niro or Pacino.
Right.
But
right.
Somebody needs to, you know, grab Kate McKinnon by the, you know, shoulder and be like, hey, can I talk to you for a second about not mugging every second that you can see the camera lens?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely every second. And why I started this with sort of a half apology is many of the reviews, many of the people I've talked to, she's their favorite part. So clearly I'm in the minority here. But it bothered me.
Right.
It bothered me in general that we have four goofball hams mugging it up the entire movie.
Okay.
I thought the movie needed a little bit more subtlety, a little bit more cleverness, a little bit more sarcasm, and a little bit less, you know, like another joke about, you know, Thor's dick, you know?
Yeah!
You know what I mean? Like,
okay, all right.
You, what did you think?
Okay, so, you had, before you had been on the podcast, you had posted something about, hey, I took my daughter to see this. Was it the best movie? Was it the worst movie? It was fun. It was fun. We had a good time. Da 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 da.
Yep.
And even then, with just that much, you still got flack for it, right?
Well, that was on someone else's Facebook page where I said essentially the same thing.
Okay.
Which is, you know, can't say I hated it.
Yeah.
Can't say it was terribly clever. Can't say it was scary.
Right.
5-year-old loved it. She really wanted to see it again. It's appropriate for kids of that age. That's essentially what I said. Like, way shorter version of the very short review I gave on Facebook. And somebody jumped down my throat about it. Like,
yeah.
Like, go be a wet blanket somewhere else, bro. Whoa.
Well, clearly you are very influential in their lives. Otherwise, they wouldn't have said that. So,
yeah, I know.
So good on you.
And then I give her back another, you know, it's the internet. I give her back a little argument. I'm like, hey, look, you know.
Yeah.
Most of the reviews I read were lukewarm.
Right.
The box office was lukewarm. The theater I was in sort of, you know, received it in a lukewarm way.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, shut up. You know, like, oh, everybody was laughing ecstatically in my theater. Like.
Okay.
Okay, fine. And that's exactly what I said.
I'm okay.
Like, okay, that's it. I'm not going to get into it with you on Facebook.
All right. So when I saw it, and I think I saw it right after you, I saw it later on in the afternoon.
Probably like the show immediately after.
Yeah. So I had no expectations.
Did you see it in 3D or IMAX or any of that shit?
No, just regular version.
Regular
so
missionary style.
Regular meat and potatoes, Ghostbusters version 1.0. So when we saw it, what I thought was very interesting, as it has been reported numerous times, and it's, again, it's a causality from Marvel Comics and DC and all these different things to the point where, you know, even Harry Potter's coming back with Fantastic Beasts and where Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, DJ Potter.
I was going to say beasts and then you heard beats and then I thought I said bees. Now I'm saying bees? Beads?
Bees.
Bees. Beads. All right. So there's always
the development.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So they had all the, you know, Sony and TriStar, Ghost Core, new production company.
Yeah, I was sort of thrown by that too. I'm like,
it's like
in the old movies and I just didn't notice it?
No, it wasn't.
That's brand new?
Interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah, so that's how it started off.
I hope it doesn't have a layer of dust on it in 365 days coming.
This,
I feel like it might.
This is what I thought. I thought it was better than I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I had fun. I'm probably not going to watch it again.
It was fun.
It was more fun than I thought it was going to be.
Fun than a visit to the proctologist's office.
It was not devoid of fun.
Yeah.
It
wasn't a hateful experience.
There were a couple of chuckles here and there. You know what it is that it's just frustrating.
Yeah.
Because I am not as funny as Kristen Wiig,
exactly.
Melissa McCarthy,
exactly.
Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones, half the staff half the cast that are from Veep and Silicon Valley and all the cameos that you will see in this movie.
Yeah, and some better than others.
Yeah, way better than others. In fact, I would say that 4 out of 5 of them are pretty good. There's one that I have a lot of issue with.
We'll get into that in a minute. We'll get into which ones we liked and didn't like.
Yeah, but it's a point of where... You know, it's supposed to be a comedy first and foremost.
Absolutely.
I laughed more with Chris Hemsworth's character than I did with...
Isn't that weird? Isn't it weird that they gave all the... And it's not because Chris Hemsworth is funnier than any of those 4 actresses. They gave all the best writing and dialogue to the dumb guy. And I don't care that he's a dumb guy. It was a funny part.
Yeah.
They gave... Literally, like, he's the only character that has any snappy writing at all.
Yeah.
Like, Leslie Jones, like, gets, like, all her laughs and all her lines, for the most part, are essentially, oh, hell no, and stuff like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
sassy black woman.
Sassy black woman.
Yeah.
Or just sassy, whatever.
But here's the other thing that I had. Here's the other thing that I didn't understand, came to understand, and then I was kind of frustrated because... When I was looking at the movie and Kate McKinnon's character came on and she was kind of twitchy and manic, mm-hmm. I didn't realize that what she was essentially doing was that they're all supposed to be the trope of Dr. Venkman,
right.
Dr. Spengler, and, you know, like all of these characters from the reboot that they don't really mention, but you know that they have to kind of allude to in their own way.
Not 100%.
Right, but they're all doing different things from the characters that had originated from the 84 Ghostbusters and then Ghostbusters 2 to where Kristen Wiig is supposed to be Peter Venkman, but she's not sarcastic. The sarcastic comments are coming from Kate McKinnon,
right.
Where you've got... Kate
McKinnon. Sarcastic, which is bizarre.
Yeah, Kate McKinnon's like mad genius thing, like that was kind of cool. Like all the trinkets and things that she was inventing to catch ghosts. That was legitimately cool, and like I wish they would have done more of that.
Expand on that. Yeah.
Yeah, but
that's
but there wasn't somebody like Egon who collects spores and molds and protozoa is telling you that, hey, listen, the interest on this third mortgage loan is going to cost you $95,000 interest. Now, again, I want to be fair to the movie where, you know, obviously there are things that this movie was able to do in 2016 that probably couldn't be done today, like... Dan Aykroyd getting his dick sucked by a ghost.
Yeah.
You probably couldn't do that today because everyone's too PC and the internet would lose its collective mind.
A PG-13 movie.
Right. So all the different characters are switching up like different things that they're doing and all that sort of thing. And Chris Hemsworth is doing the Annie Potts character from Ghostbusters, and she's hitting on he's hitting on her, all this sort of thing. And Leslie Jones is still black.
She's still
the sassy black woman.
Sassy black woman with not much to do.
Yeah.
It was a little bit, I don't know, I'm surprised that black people aren't a little bit more, like, ticked off about that, actually.
My second gripe with this movie, and again, I was trying to be fair, but the villain, way generic. Super, ultra, uber generic, because...
They didn't beef it out. Like, I thought the actor was actually kind of fine. Like, if they'd have beefed it out more, what were you going to say? Because what?
It's supposed to be a horror comedy.
Yeah.
It's a comedy horror movie.
Right.
Like, you've got
a disgruntled nerd.
You've got Gozer the Gozerian, who in the rivers of blood in this huge building in the middle of downtown Manhattan supposed to be a conduit towards the occult and everything. You've got Viggo the Carpathian, who got killed 27 different ways.
Right.
And then you've got millennial hipster nerd that got shit on.
Yeah.
So I'm going to bring Ghost back because... You know what? I hate humans too, but I'm not trying to kill the entire city of New York City, so...
Yeah, it's fine to have him be the villain, because I actually thought that the guy who played him had, like, a real creepiness to the way he played the character, but then have him unleash some demigod or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta beef it out. It's just like, you and I think, felt a lot the same way about this movie, and I sort of said it in my little mini-review online, which was, these four actresses, I'm perfectly fine with being the new Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Even though I don't even care for two of them. It's not like I'm a huge Ernie Hudson fan, so it doesn't matter.
You know? Right,
like,
right.
I don't need to be super into everyone that plays the Ghostbusters. Being really into Kristen Wiig and being sort of into Melissa McCarthy is enough for me, and the other two, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
But the whole thing needed more structure, which starts, number one, with a better script, and these four could have been, and a little bit more structure from the director, I think. I think reining some of the hammy and mugginess and goofiness in, that's the director's job. That's the director to say, hey, wait, let's try one that's a little bit less, you know?
Let's play it straight.
We all like goofiness.
Right.
You know? Well, it's like we all like Hershey syrup. So we like a little bit of Hershey syrup on our ice cream.
Yeah.
So how about I put one bowl with one scoop of ice cream in it, and then I just empty the entire Hershey syrup into the bowl so that the ice cream is completely submerged inside of Hershey syrup.
Right.
Would that be better? No.
No.
A little bit, you know, like on top, sprinkled around. That's what's good. You don't need nothing but Hershey syrup, and that's what this movie is.
It's too wacky.
It's too wacky, exactly. That was my complaint.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people who listen to this going, oh, come on, bro, like essentially what that girl said to me online.
Yeah.
But that's how I felt, and I think that's how a lot of people felt after seeing this movie.
Yeah, and I was trying to...
That's why I think kids like it. That's why I think
my friend
loved it. She's like, well, yeah, the humor is not subtle. It's not, you know, it has... There's nothing to it. Like, what
right.
you see is what you get. There's plenty of fart jokes and things like that, you know?
Well, there's queef jokes.
Yeah, it's actually a queef joke. That's true.
Yeah. So when you're thinking about it going before, you know, the original movie, as much as I would like to say that the special effects were way ahead of their time and all that stuff. Okay, look, remember when the Keymaster meets the Gatekeeper, right?
Yeah.
And then the entire penthouse area of the building explodes and just all this evil is just filtering out in the world.
Yeah.
And what do you got? You got two Treks.
Yeah.
And they're just filtering out the ghosts.
Yeah.
Like, the special effects in this are a little bit better. What I would have...
The boiling egg, the fried egg thing on the counter is always, you know...
Yeah,
one
but...
of the great bits.
Right,
one
but again...
practical bits.
But again, we're going back to, like, if we're going to talk about, you know, like, really evil shit hitting New York City, and it's,
yeah.
and it's you know, prime to do that, I want some occult stuff. I want some, like... There are so many stories that you could have used in,
yeah.
you know, like, hey, you killed a pilgrim. Well, why don't you use, like, the pilgrim that came from New Amsterdam and they bought the island of Manhattan for $24 and now he's in a rage because he got, you know, he didn't get his money back or something
yeah,
like that, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, so...
But we all know that this Ghostbusters sequel and or reboot and or revamp or whatever we want to call it has been gestating for 20 years
now. Yeah, yeah,
I
yeah.
I mean, they were talking about making it with Chris Farley and Chris Rock, and then there was talk a couple years ago with Vince Vaughn and Jonah Hill and
God,
things
I,
like that.
I really wish you wouldn't have told me that, by the way, because now it's even sadder that, you know, you
I
could
know.
Have had Chris Rock and Chris Farley. That would have been
I know,
shit.
I agree 100%. But, again, I'm fine with this cast. But what I think happened was, I think they brought in Paul Feig, and they got Kristen Wiig, and they got Melissa McCarthy, and they got a script, and they said, hey, you know what? Script's not perfect, but it doesn't matter. We got Melissa McCarthy, and we got Kristen Wiig, and we got Paul Feig,
yeah.
and we got the other two, and, you know, script doesn't have to be perfect. And I think that was a mistake. Now, I could be wrong. All I know is there was a million scripts delivered throughout the years, and none of them were good enough, until all of a sudden they got the all-female cast, and then pretty much the first script that came along was good enough. And I'm telling you, it wasn't good enough.
You know what this movie reminded me of, honestly? It reminded me of Star Wars The Force Awakens.
And I'm
going to tell you why. Because in the same way that it liberally borrows from A New Hope, this borrows from... You know, it's in a different order. They're done different ways, mm-hmm. but they get kicked out of the university. And then they get the place to start their business. And they borrow the car. And
yes.
they do and they get admonished by the mayor. And they do this and they do that. It's in a different way. Like, it's fine.
And the reason we should say that they can do all of those things is because... And again, spoiler alert, actually, for the first time. But if you're listening this far, you either A, don't give a fuck, or B, already saw the movie.
Yeah.
The Ghostbusters movie from 1984 does not exist in this world. There is no Peter Venkman. There is no Ray Stantz. There is no Egon, whatever the fuck his name was.
Is that established?
I think so, right?
I mean, is it?
There's absolutely no reference to it whatsoever.
Damn.
And all of those actors play different characters in the movie.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, there's no references, no direct references whatsoever to the events of the first movie.
There's just allusions to them.
There is jokes which are meant only for the audience, but make no sense in the world of the 2016 film.
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
Yeah,
exactly. Stuff like that. Okay.
There are jokes like that, which, you know, like, I guess that one, strangely, sort of makes sense in the case of Chris Hemsworth, because he's constantly fumbling with how to pick up the phone. I do have to say, the Chris Hemsworth stuff is the best part of the movie.
How
much would you hate the movie if Chris Hemsworth wasn't in it? What percentage of the laughs and fun that you said you had in the movie came from Chris Hemsworth?
Shit. 30%.
Only 30?
35.
I would say, and I said that I sort of smiled throughout the movie and I might have chuckled a couple times, I would say 80% of it was from Chris Hemsworth.
80%? Okay.
Probably.
I warmed up to Kate McKinnon. I warmed up to her. I originally thought it was like, oh, okay, it makes sense now. Okay, I see what they're trying to do. There's one joke that the mayor of New York, Andy Garcia,
one of the weird cameos.
Right, but I am not the Jaws mayor. Do not make me the Jaws mayor. That made me laugh out loud.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
But what I will say is this, is that in the constant arguing that the internet has had over this film forever, especially for the last 4 or 5 months. How ironic is it that the person that we thought was the funniest turned out to be a guy?
Well, that's what I'm saying. They gave all the best writing
right
to a guy.
In a female cast, but anyway.
And literally every male character in this movie, and again, don't care at all.
Yeah.
You can make whatever movie you want. The movie was written by a man and a woman. So,
yeah.
Like, you know, who knows which jokes came from which one. But
right.
Literally every character in the movie that is a man is an asshole or a pussy. And I mean that I don't mean that in the biological sense of those two words.
Hold on.
Yeah. I don't think there's any examples of someone who is not.
No, there's not even a love. No, there's not a love interest aside from Kristen.
No.
Aside Chris from
Hemsworth, total pussy. Like, oh yeah, or moron, by the way.
Moron. Yeah.
Moron, pussy, asshole.
Yeah.
Like, but there is no male character that does not embody. To be fair, given the way they wrote the four main characters, they're essentially one of those three things too, actually. Like, I mean, they're all morons. Like,
yeah.
The movie doesn't even follow its own rules, you know. The proton packs, they don't kill the ghosts. They never did in the original movies, and they don't in the first 3/4 of this movie. And then all of a sudden at the end of the movie, the proton packs are just killing ghosts. Like, it doesn't follow its own rules, you know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
They're meant to lure, you know, sort of guide it into the trap. There's lots of just sort of nonsense scientific speak that's going on in the movie.
Right, but
that happened in the original.
It happens in the original.
No doubt. But it's just, it doesn't bring anything new to the table creatively. It doesn't bring a shred of originality to something that already existed. And therefore, it's just another reboot to me.
This is my question. Okay.
It's forgettable. Ultimately, the thing is that this movie is the worst thing forgettable.
Would have it been better for a movie like this to be made that had the same themes, you know, trapping ghosts, paranormal activity? Call it something else.
Yeah.
Or do this. Because, you know, the internet always has an opinion, and they would have crucified this project. But what I'm saying is that you don't have to make a spy movie named James Bond.
Yeah.
You can make The Man from U.N.C.L.E. You can make Bourne. You can make Spy with Melissa McCarthy. You can make, you know, several other different things.
Yeah.
You don't have to make it implicitly about James Bond.
Of course.
Yeah, so you can make a movie that's, you know, similar, and obviously there would be comparisons made between Ghostbusters and the movie that is, you know, similar but not the same, but it is, but it's not.
Right.
Would it have been...
I think it's better to make a good ripoff as opposed to, you know,
yes.
I think you're smarter to make a good ripoff. Because
okay.
You make a reboot, people automatically, like, every single thing they look at, they got a point. If you make a ripoff, you're sort of forced to change the proton pack. You can't just make something exactly like it. You know what I mean? You're sort of forced to invent a new logo. You're forced to come up with a different this and that.
Okay.
The car is not going to be exactly like the car from the first movie. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right.
And the fire station and the jumpsuits and everything, it's lazy. It feels lazy to people. Can't do that with a ripoff. You're sort of forced to become a little bit more creative. And that's why, you know, those types of movies, all those ones you just named, like Spy and The Man from U.N.C.L.E., they were sort of forced to come up with their own palette. This movie didn't have to do that. It didn't come up with its own anything.
Jokes
are scarce.
Let me bring up the subject of laziness.
Yeah.
Because as we continue,
can we talk about it later.
Very good. Because as we continue on the Untitled Movie Podcast on MoreLikeRadio.com, there seems to be, to me, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but there seems to be kind of a very loud response from movie-going audiences, world, you know, domestically especially, that your laziness as a filmmaker, as a production company, as a theater is not going to be rewarded anymore because you've got, for example, the BFG.
Yeah.
Which made next to nothing when it opened July 4th weekend, and in its second weekend, it made $3 million.
Oof.
Yeah. Right now it is at $47 million after 17 days of release. And this movie was apparently, obviously, done by Steven Spielberg.
Right.
It's from Amblin Entertainment. It's supposed to be, you know, very, you know, otherworldly and great special effects and everything else and blah, blah, blah. But apparently nobody cared. Nobody cared enough to watch it to the point where now you've got everyone talking about, oh, is Spielberg losing it? Is he losing his Midas touch? You've got Independence Day Resurgence, which bombed. You've got X-Men Apocalypse, which... Yeah. Didn't do as well as everyone wanted it to.
Didn't bomb, but nobody gave a shit.
Right. But is that worse? Worse than giving a shit? Like, there's nothing worse than not giving a shit, right? I mean,
no.
It's just...
I think for a movie studio, for a filmmaker, for an actor, for these people that are making these things, I think, yeah, absolutely. Especially when you are giving these movies the kind of marketing blitz that they gave these.
Yeah.
Certainly Independence Day and X-Men. Maybe not the BFG. I think the title is what killed the BFG. People are like... I know... that it's Big Friendly Giant, but like in and around the release of the movie, I'm like, what does it stand for again? Like, big.
You're talking about like, yeah, BFD, big fucking deal.
Yeah,
that's
how I feel about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that, and yet, in spite of what I'm talking about when it comes to, you know, sequels and they're not doing well and everything else, and yet your number one box office movie of the year is Finding Dory, because it is now up to $445 million. Your second place is another sequel, Captain America Civil War, at $405. Deadpool, which has kind of an established story, and so, you know, $363 million. Jungle Book, which is another reboot, at $360 million. Zootopia, which is the only original movie out of all of these, that's at $341.
The other thing that all those remakes and reboots that you just named there on those top grossing, whether it's Finding Dory or Captain America, what the hell was it called? Civil War,
yeah.
Forget.
Yeah.
Forget what that movie was for me.
Who cares?
But for most people, that movie was extremely well reviewed.
Yeah.
So was Jungle Book. So was Deadpool. So was Finding Dory.
Right.
These movies, I think what's happening is not that the public is getting completely lazy with reboots and things like that. I think they're sort of wising up.
Yeah.
And they're sort of...
Well, I wasn't talking about the audience being lazy. I was just talking about the audience becoming more savvy. I think that's where you're going with this.
Saying.
Okay.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
No. I think the filmmaking is lazy in things like the movies, the Ghostbusters and things like that.
Gotcha.
I don't think the audience is lazy. I think the audience is... We're agreeing. The audience is becoming more savvy. They're wising up to the fact that... If it ain't there in the trailer, it probably ain't there. The X-Men trailer, the Independence Day trailer, the Ghostbusters trailer, it ain't there.
Yeah.
There's nothing funny, there's nothing exciting, who cares?
Yeah.
Versus Finding Dory, versus Captain America.
Yeah.
And not only the trailer, but the reviews, the word of mouth. People are sort of saying, if it gets good reviews, I'll see it. If not, I think that's happening a lot more than it used to. Which
right.
People say it's good, I'll go see it. If people aren't talking about how good it is, I'm not going to go see it. I do think that's happening more. With the Metacritics and Rotten Tomatoes and all the aggregate sites and review sites and things like that out there. Strangely enough, we think that, you know, like print, yes, is dying, but the internet is all about talking. And that's what's happening on the internet. You know, these movies have a buzz that comes out a week before the movie actually shows in theaters.
Or more than that, if
or
you're...
more,
yeah.
Know. It's on Twitter. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But again, I would liken it back to where you and I are on the same page when it comes to, listen, you can make an opinion about whatever movie that you want. You got to give it a chance, though.
Yeah, you can't.
You got to go see it, and you got to, you know, and you don't have to see it when it comes out in the movie theater, and you don't have to see it until it, you know, comes out on Netflix or at Redbox or anything else. But you can't just appropriate all the stuff like it's ruining my childhood. Like, really, if your movie, this movie that's coming out, is ruining your childhood, then obviously you've got way deeper problems.
Right.
So
at the same time, I do think you can make some comments about things.
Sure.
I mean, certainly you can say, hey, you know what? Independence Day, do we need it? Do we really need that?
Yeah.
Like, do we have any idea what's going to happen at the end of that movie? Like, I haven't seen Independence Day. Neither of you, right?
Yeah, no.
Does the world blow up at the end of it?
Probably.
Probably? You think, like, that's it? The aliens win? Like, hooray! Like,
fuck, I don't know. I just...
The humans probably win.
I don't need it. I care so less about that movie that
I couldn't care less.
Yeah.
My thing is, I'm not against reboots. I'm not against remakes. I'm not crazy about the idea of it, but I'm not precious about anything. There is no property that I'm so precious about it that I refuse to see. I mean, if you're asking my opinion, I'm going to tell you, no, don't remake it. But there's nothing that I absolutely will refuse to make if you go out and make it. My only thing is, don't be lazy.
Right.
Like, make it worth seeing. Don't just use the title as a means to get me into the theater.
Yeah.
Make it worth seeing. Make it memorable. Ghostbusters is forgettable.
I mean, I would think that, okay, and let's, scale of 1 to 5, what would you give it?
Scale of 1 to 5?
Yes.
Ghostbusters?
Yes.
Man, 1 to 5 scale is rough.
Dude, 1 to 5, like, you
can
do.
2 seems like, holy fuck, it must have sucked. And 3's like, it's pretty good.
You can do a half.
Oh, okay. Well, then 2.5.
2.5? That sounds about right.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's like a C minus.
C plus? Oh, no, you'll shoot your eye out. Now, I would say that what we need to do is we need to be asking you about, you know, opinions about future projects. Because it seems like you have the savvy, you have the know-how, you have the juice on what should be going on as far as a project is concerned and what absolutely needs to be canceled. For example, if I were to ask you 6 months ago, hey, listen, we've got this we've got this property that we're going to put on ABC. It's going to be a television show that's based on a popular John Candy film from the 80s, and we're going to put a black actor, Mike Epps. Should we go along with this project or not?
Yeah, I'd say no. I think that falls into the category of, if it were funny, you could call it anything you wanted to call it. You could call it Uncle Mike, you know, like, or whatever. It's not important.
Right.
You called it Uncle Buck,
right,
even though it has nothing to do with Uncle Buck, because, okay, yes, it is the same premise. Uncle takes care of kids while parents are out of town.
Right.
All right? You could make that movie and call it something else, or make that into a TV show and call it something else. You could probably run it for 2 seasons before anybody ever said, this is kind of like Uncle Buck, you know?
Right.
So you could have called it anything. You called it Uncle Buck, and now you're inviting all that comparison. This goes back to what we were talking about before. You'd be smarter not to do that.
Right.
You'd be smarter to force yourself to become more creative. Let me guess. Did he drive some old hoopty that backfired whenever he started it up?
Well, I have no idea because it is now canceled by ABC. And so, yeah. And so, yeah, it's it got poor ratings, and apparently Mike Epps is...
It went downtown and had a rat and all that thing off its face?
Yes, it did. Buying it with a quarter first.
Yeah.
Russell's work. Ugh, God, so terrible. Well, let's talk about something that completely surprised me that you and I were talking about before we actually did the Untitled Movie podcast starting off is that... So apparently there is the Alien franchise.
Yeah, apparently.
That is going to be two-track divergent sequel where Neil Blomkamp, who directed District 9 and Chappie, I'm sure people don't want to talk about Chappie, but they'll talk about District 9 all day and all night.
And the Matt Damon one.
Elysium.
Not as bad as everyone made it out to be.
That's all right.
Yeah, not great, not bad.
But he is doing an Alien sequel that picks up right after James Cameron's Aliens.
Yeah.
He's completely forgetting about Alien 3. He's completely forgetting about Alien Resurrection.
Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection can go F themselves in Neil Blomkamp's world.
Right, and because...
That's how I feel. I love those movies.
And because it's also going to star Sigourney Weaver and Michael Bane, and I don't know, is the actress from Newt appearing in these movies too?
Oh, God. They get anybody to play Newt.
Oh, probably.
Wanted to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But the character, at least.
I don't even think she's an actress anymore. Yeah. I think the idea is that both Newt and Hicks from Aliens, the James Cameron movie, will be returning.
Okay. But then you also reminded me that we've got another movie that's coming out, Alien Covenant.
Alien Covenant.
Which is going to be directed
by Danny McBride.
Is it starring Danny McBride?
Danny McBride is in it. But,
is he really?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, no, he's not the star of the movie, but he is in it.
But it has Noomi Rapace from Prometheus.
It does, and it's also got Michael Fassbender.
Oh, shit, that's right.
So they're coming back from Prometheus, those two characters from Prometheus. It's got several other people that are going to be in it. The chick that played Steve Jobs, ex-wife in Steve Jobs, whatever her name is, Catherine Watterson, I think. She's like the main actress in the movie. There's been like one or two stills already released from it that you can see online, like production stills. But yeah, but then I think also that Ridley Scott said at the beginning that this movie will not be, you know, featuring xenomorphs, which is weird because it's the same thing that he said about Prometheus, and then it did sort of feature like a half-assed version of one at the end.
Right.
Now you're gonna make a new movie, takes place on a different island, or a different planet. And it's called Alien Covenant, but it doesn't feature xenomorphs. Like, for my money, Alien, you know, Covenant can not exist. I might kick myself in the balls later on for saying that, because it might be really good. And I kind of half like Prometheus. But I feel like, let Blomkamp do his thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If you want to make movies called Alien that don't feature aliens, well, then you can go F yourself, and I'd rather go watch this guy's movie.
Well, it seems like they accidentally fell into, like, oh, well, everyone else is doing a universe movie trope. Well, we'll just do it as well. We just have divergent tracks that we're going
along. Well, I don't know that the Neil Blomkamp movie, like, he's really trying hard and, like, spinning his wheels trying to get it off the ground, but I don't know that it is 100% off the ground yet. Like, he's really working on it. He's got, you know, pre-production stills. He's got storyboards. Sigourney Weaver is on board with it. And he's got a script he's working on. And then they sort of put the brakes on it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, to the point where apparently they were at Comic-Con and even Sigourney Weaver is talking about, quote, it's just as if, you know, the packs fork and one direction goes off to 3 or 4 and another direction goes off to Neil's movie.
Yeah.
So apparently she's in.
She's in. No, I think she's been in from the beginning, and she has said that. She's got to be, like, in her 60s, though.
Yeah, but then I also saw a trailer today before Ghostbusters, and it has Tom Hanks, and he's running around the world, saving the world from this or that, and it's from the Da Vinci Code, Angels and Demons crap, and the girlfriend was asking, isn't Tom Hanks, like, 70 years old? No,
I don't know if he's quite 70, but he's probably,
he's pushing 60, definitely. 60, yeah, 60, definitely in the 60s.
Something like that. Yeah. But I don't know, like, some professor, like, I would be fine with Sigourney Weaver playing the Robert Langdon part, because it's like a professor who's sort of, you know, like, trotting around the globe, you know, like, vaguely religious intrigue and stuff like that, like, sort of spy stuff. But and I'm sure there's some ridiculous action that he's getting into, but Sigourney Weaver is going to be, you know, like, holding a flamethrower, like, chasing an alien around a planet, like, you know,
right.
It's slightly different. I would, you know, pitch a fit if I saw Hanks holding a flamethrower too. it feels very Keith Richards and Mick Jagger to me.
It would just seem that you don't have to have a universe. You really don't. You don't have to make things all about... I know it's very hard for me to say because I'm not making all the money, but you don't have to make it about the money. You can just make one off and then do... You know what
exactly.
It is?
Alien Covenant doesn't feature xenomorphs? Fucking call it Covenant.
Like Jason Hornsby, our friend, talks about. If he's writing something, he's not going on a trend. He's not doing a sequel. He's not creating a thing that's biting off of someone else's work. He's trying to make something original. And yeah, doing original things sucks because you have to think of it
right
from the very beginning.
Well, it's like, you know, we call sequels part two.
Yeah.
So that should make you think that, like, okay, the first one was the first part and this is the second part. They're two parts that make a whole, you know? Like,
yeah.
They're two parts of a whole. At this point, we should just call it, you know, Independence Day, let's see if that shit works again. Like, because it's not part two.
Yeah.
When you make it 20 years later, or 40 years later in the case of Alien, you know? Like,
yeah.
This is not part two, or part seven, or 7.5, or wherever we're at with the split of the two paths.
Right. Well, listen, all I know is that there are very few movies that would ever get consideration for a sequel, and rightfully they shouldn't. One movie that does not deserve a sequel, that actually celebrated an impromptu holiday earlier this week, and that is on July 14th, was the movie that was directed by Simon West, who also directed Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley, and that is Simon West's Con Air. Oh, starring your favorite actor and mine, Cameron Poe, a.k.a. Nicolas Cage.
Put the bunny down.
Why couldn't you put the bunny back in the basket? How is this the best terrible movie that you've seen ever?
No, it's up there. It's up there.
Yeah?
I don't know. The 90s were really good for movies like this. The 90s were really good for movies that, like, you can't quite tell if they knew they were making a shitty movie. Like, there's lots of other decades where it's like, okay, now they're making Sharknado 4, The Fourth Awakens, or whatever, you know, and it's like, yeah, they know that they're making, you know, or, you know, Arachnoquake, or, you know,
right.
Dino Croc versus Octogodzilla, or whatever. Like, they're clearly, like, well aware.
See, now you're just reading the wall at Blockbuster Video whenever we get, like, all the B and C movies that come in.
I actually watched Arachnoquake over the July 4th holiday with my brother.
This July 4th,
it was, you know, Sci-Fi Channel plays a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, you flip through it, and you see Eddie Furlong, you know, pushing 220 pounds.
What?
And it's like, holy shit, what is this? And then, like, an animated spider crawls all over his head, and it's like, oh, fuck, I gotta watch this.
Like, Edward Furlong from Terminator 2?
John Connor, like, as in, come with me if you want to live.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
It's
more like, come with me if you want another slice of cheesecake. No, he looks terrible. Yeah, he looks terrible.
God damn.
I mean, he's like, pff, I don't know. He's clearly well over 200 pounds, and he's, you know, 5'4" or whatever he is, and he's got these bags under his eyes. Looks like he just, you know, ingested a meth soda.
Meth soda.
He looks terrible. And he's in Arachnoquake, so how good can things be going?
Right.
But there are movies like that. And then in the 90s, there was movies like Con Air, Face Off, and mostly Nicolas Cage movies.
Right.
No, but, you know,
Anaconda.
Like, movies that you can't really tell if they knew they were making a shitty movie or not.
And right.
I think some of the people involved did know they were making a shitty movie.
Right.
Like, I think that Nick Cage was in on the joke on both Face Off and Con Air. I think he, like, actively was looking for over-the-top action movies to make in the wake of Leaving Las Vegas. I think that John Malkovich was in on the joke. But I think there's other stars in the movie, and maybe even the director of the movie, who were not aware. They thought they were making a serious
action movie with gravitas.
Yeah. And they weren't. Anaconda likewise. Like, I think that J-Lo thought this was going to be her movie, and it was going to be a huge hit, and it's going to be the new Jaws and stuff like that.
But it was a huge hit. It was a huge hit.
Yeah. But it has not aged well.
Oh, of course not.
And certainly wasn't the new Jaws. But John Voight knew exactly what the fuck he was doing. Like, John Voight got that script and was like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm doing this.
We are doing
this. Yeah, like, you know.
And Anaconda will hold you tighter than your truest love.
River style.
River style.
Ice Cube said yes because his agent brought it to him and they were going to pay him, you know, 800 grand or whatever he made for a movie back then. Same with, you know, Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
And everyone else that was in Baby Bird, you know, like everyone else who was in the movie just made it. John Voight was like, oh, fuck yeah. I'm going to have this guy. He's going to have a long ponytail. He's going to have, like, a, you know, Argentinian accent.
Is that what it is, an Argentinian accent?
It's some bizarre Central or South American accent that doesn't quite...
Please say Central, because I feel like when you say it's a South American accent, I get personally offended, because it is clearly not anywhere near past the Southern...
I don't know, man. I think that feels more, you know... Something like that. That's what it felt like to me. I don't know. He probably says in the movie. I just don't remember. He probably says where he's from.
Right. Well, I should mention, too, that when this movie, when Anaconda came out, that our friend Jamie Duvall, who does Movie Geeks United, that podcast, he did the best, spot-on John Voight impression. Yeah,
with the lip and the eyes and everything.
Yeah, to the point where I guess if you were ever regurgitated by a huge anaconda, he could probably wink at you in the same way that John Voight did. But what is a better bad good movie, Con Air or Face Off?
Oh, Con Air. Con Air for sure. First off, Face Off's a little bit long. And it gets a little bit... It kind of comes off the wheels at the end of the movie.
Okay.
The first half of Face Off is fantastic. And I like all of Face Off. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't entirely work. And it sort of takes itself a little too seriously, maybe in the last act or whatever.
Yeah.
Con Air is fucking like... By the last act, Con Air is going wilder than it was in the first act. You know, like, they're landing a plane on the Vegas Strip and this kind of stuff. Like, you know, Steve Buscemi's character's roaming around looking for someone's face to chew off. And all this kind of... It's great. Like, Cameron Poe's mullet is, like, blowing in the air. Like, every shot.
His
like, get the mullet fan.
His blowing mullet and his receding hairline. And then you know that whenever Leanne Rimes' How Do I Live just plays, like, oh, here comes the sad part. We're supposed to start drying the tears from our eyes right now.
Yeah, because he's a lethal weapon.
Oh, he's a lethal
weapon. His hands are a lethal weapon. Like, he should have known what to do with them. Like, the guys were, like, attempting to murder him, but the judge throws the book at him because he should have known better, or whatever, you know, like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So anyway, I watched that with some friends of ours on July 14th! I'm gonna see my daddy on July 14th! One move and the bunny gets it. Oh, so it is as...
Sigh. Anara.
It's really, really bad.
It's so bad.
Oh, it's too bad. I liked Pinball.
I don't know if...
He's...
Pinball? Call me Johnny 600 if they knew the truth.
Oh.
Yeah. The movie's ridiculous, but it's ridiculous in the best possible way.
Nice. Well, as we wrap up on the Untitled Movie Podcast, because I don't know if you knew this, Chris. Well, I mean, obviously you do, because we were talking about it last time we were on, when we had Damon, the American Dream, but we actually went under an hour for the very first time. And as this is our 11th, can you believe this is our 11th show?
Right?
It's our 11th show.
No kidding.
I would like to talk to the Untitled Movie Podcast listeners and you that in the realm of sequels and reboots and how people get it right, but they get it a lot wrong more than they get it right.
Definitely.
I would like to again stress that you need to watch Richard Linklater's Everybody Wants Some.
Oh, I want to. Just became available on demand.
Yes, and it is a spiritual sequel to the movie Dazed and Confused, which happened in the 70s. A bunch of high school kids somewhere in Texas, and the plot of that story is that someone's trying to get tickets to go see Kiss. They're playing in Dallas or Fort Worth or someplace like that, and then they're having a rager at the end of the night because everyone's graduating and the freshmen are coming in from middle school and they're all being initiated. And this movie is essentially along the same lines. There's really no plot. It's about one guy that's joining a star Texas University baseball team. They've been state champs before. They're going to hopefully get to that promised land again. He's meeting all the different guys. It's 3 days before classes start at this particular college.
They sort of build it, I think it was even on the poster,
yeah.
A spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused, which is a cult classic. I mean, the movie was not a success when it came out, but we've all seen it. It's one of the most quotable movies, probably... would you say top 20 most quotable movies of all time?
Oh God, absolutely, yeah.
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 Top 10. Like, there's a ton of really quotable, like...
Top 10 for us, top 20 for sure, only because it's, you know, it's got so many people that were from nothing.
They were nobody.
But now...
In 1994, when that movie came out, there were nobody.
Right, but now you have... Batman was in it. Right. Matthew McConaughey, who's about to be with Idris Elba in the new Dark Tower movie.
And
he's in it.
Even minor characters, the Anthony Rapps, the Nicky Katz, all the other people that you've seen in a million other things. The London Brothers, whichever one it was that was in that.
Jeremy. Yeah.
Okay. I'm smoking crack now, so I'm done now.
Oh, that sucks. Parker Posey's in it.
Yep.
Joey Lauren Adams.
Mia Jovovich.
Oh, Mia Jovovich.
Joey Lauren Adams, you're right.
Yep. But let's go back to Mia Jovovich. Joey Lauren Adams, who's in Chasing Amy with Ben Affleck many, many years later. But I thought that this movie was fun.
Yeah,
it doesn't have a very intricate plot.
Yeah, and nor did Dazed and Confused. What I was going to ask you though is,
yeah,
spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused. It's on all the posters and stuff like that.
Yes.
Is that appropriate? Is that how you would describe it? Also,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
That makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. Only because, you know, I had a problem with how easy everything was coming to these guys. Like, they just go around from party to party and they get to do whatever they want. But then you realize that, well, shit, if you're a college jock on a championship baseball team, of course you're going to get whatever you want. If you look like the main guy, and this guy, I don't know what the actor's name is, but he was on the show Glee, and he's super cut, and he looks fucking awesome, and whatever, you're going to get a lot of avenues that, you know, most normal schlub, you know, like Edward Furlong, 200 pounds. Arachnequake Edward Furlong is not going to have. And, you know, there's a couple things that are, you know, probably not necessary for this movie that you would need in other movies, for example. Like, Ghostbusters would need a definitive villain, not millennial hipster guy that hates all people, so he's just going to create obstacles for the new Ghostbuster female team that is just going to annoy them rather than, you know, like, bring, like, serious, like, satanic occult shit.
Yeah.
Like, there's a couple things that happen in Everybody Wants Some, but at the end of the day, like, all they want to do is just party and have fun, and, like, we'll hang out with punks, we'll hang out with cowboys, we'll hang out amongst each other, like, we're busting each other's balls because that's what guys do, but we're not...
You think it's going to be... You think that there's, like, actors in this who, in 20 years from now, we're going to be talking about, like, oh, this movie's got this guy, this movie's got that guy. Like, did it seem like there was that kind of talent in it?
I could see a couple of them. The one guy... Again, there's a couple of characters that I don't know who either the actor is or...
Did you know any of the actors in the movie?
No.
They're all unknowns.
All unknowns.
Yeah. As they were in Dazed and Confused. I mean, like, you'd be hard-pressed to have anyone tell you who Ben Affleck... Maybe Parker Posey, actually, probably was the most famous person when that movie came out.
Yeah, but there's a couple of guys that are in there. The one guy, I want to say Damon had mentioned, his name was Willoughby, and he's really, really funny. He's just kind of like the schmoozy guy. Like, he's always trying to, like, create spots to, you know, like, mac on girls, you know, hit on girls, and, you know, create opportunities for boys. But then there's a part in the movie where... Like, he gets kicked out, they all get kicked out of a bar because one of them starts fighting with somebody else because he got the wrong drink order or something else, and then they're all going outside and like, oh man, like, we're sick and tired of, you know, trying to meet girls, and he's like, let me tell you something, half the time, you guys are talking about either baseball or meeting chicks. Now I'm actually getting you opportunities to meet chicks, and all, what do you want to talk about? Baseball! What do you want from me? So anyway, it's pretty fun. It's a fun movie. It put a smile on my face. I think you would probably like it. So I'd be very interested in finding out your opinion of it.
Richard Linklater is one of those, you know, I'll see it, sight unseen for me.
Yeah.
And I don't always even like it. Like, I'm not crazy about Boyhood, but, you know, most of the time, Richard Linklater, it's quality. I don't care what it's about, who's in it, doesn't matter. Richard Linklater's good, especially if he wrote it, you know.
Yeah, and it's different. I mean, it's different than what he was trying to accomplish with Boyhood. It's what he has, you know, tried to, you know, he's made vastly different movies like Bernie, Boyhood, the Before, you know, Midnight Sunrise, Sunset series. This movie obviously takes a lot out of...
Rock and roll movie, the Jack Black. Jack Black, rock and roll.
Yes, School of Rock.
School of Rock.
Yeah, and, you know, this obviously borrows from Dazed and Confused, but it's his movie. It's not from somebody else. It's something that he appropriated, and he can do whatever he wants with it. And
by the way, like, just as he was a high schooler in the time that Dazed and Confused came out, and that was sort of his story about his life at that time, this is probably essentially his story of his early college days, I'm guessing, since he was that age at that time.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, it's his own.
And also, I might add, as we wrap up on the entitled movie podcast and morelikeradio.com, that, like all Richard Linklater movies, it has a kick-ass soundtrack.
The title itself.
Yeah, Van Halen. So, but we will not leave you with that. We will leave you with The Cars' Good Times Roll. You can always follow us on the UMP on MLR. Chris and I are... racking our brains trying to come up with a new title for the Untitled Movie Podcast as we are, you know, trying to be a little bit more specific and, yeah, not lazy, exactly. But we appreciate your patronage. Follow us on the More Like Radio iTunes library, which is coming up next. And Chris, it's always been there. Next week, we will talk about other things as well. You have a good week.